Listen to you.
Ritzy.
No preparation.
None. How are you doing?
Carmine, you know what I was thinking?
What?
This is our third year of doing this.
It is.
Because we started, we talked about this at PDC 2005.
Yep.
Which was in September.
Absolutely.
We got back and we started doing this in October, 3 years ago.
Amazing. Congratulations.
Congratulations to you. We still have our jobs.
Indeed. So who's our victim today?
We have another fantastic guest. Tracy Truen. Did I say it right?
Yes.
Yay! So you have a really interesting background and kind of resume. You sent me a little blurb about yourself because Tracy's going to be at the PDC participating in our Women in Technology reception. So
excellent.
You can meet her in person while you're there. But tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, currently I am a technical assistant to Mason Eggson, who is a technical fellow working in the developer division. As a technical assistant, generally it means that you do strategy, a lot of technical strategy. Mason's responsibility is, you know, helping to guide not just the developer division, but the whole company around technology strategy. So along with, you know, several other technical fellows and distinguished engineers in the company that are all work together to do that, you know, with Ray as well. And then in addition to my technical assistant responsibilities right now, what I do is I also have some real tactical responsibilities and do some development work on another product team that Mohsin also is responsible for. And we'll be showing some of that work at PDC because the work that we're working on ships in Team Architect SKU. So,
cool.
So I do that to get to still build things and write code so that I feel like I've done something very tangible.
When we showed up today, she said that she was going to stay home in her sweats and code.
Nice.
So she still has true developer cred.
That's right.
Absolutely.
So in with my heater and my cup of tea and write code all day.
So what is there a specific technology that you and Mohsin focus on?
Not really. It just, you know, it actually just depends on what's going on, you know, in the industry. A lot of, you know, a lot of stuff that if I talked to you, I had to kill you to tell you about. But, you know, a lot of those kind of things that we look at, you know, trends and that sort of thing. It's a lot of what he does. And then I support him, you know, and if we have to do research or working with other teams within the company and that sort of thing.
Cool. So are you writing managed code or are you writing native code?
I write managed code.
Okay. C-sharp, VB?
Yes, it's C-sharp. I do. Yeah, I actually started a long time ago doing this, so I was a C developer, you know, and I quit writing C code about the time that everybody else started writing C code and C++, so I actually kind of missed that whole generation. So although I've been at Microsoft for 13 years and certainly worked in teams where we, you know, wrote native code, I've always been sort of on the more managed, and my background was in fourth generation languages, so I was actually very drawn to VB when I first got here, and even before I got here and outside of the company. So,
cool, fourth generation languages.
Wow,
nice fourth dimension.
That's right.
So let's work backwards on your Microsoft career, because you used to be part of Xbox, right?
Yep.
You were a PUM.
I was the GPM and the PUM of the console software team that shipped and launched the Xbox 360, which was a very, very cool opportunity that I got, you know, working at Microsoft. And I always tell people that one of the best parts about working at Microsoft is you get a chance sometimes, you know, occasionally in your career to just jump completely outside of your comfort zone, completely outside of any of your expertise or background. And, you know, Sony or Nintendo wouldn't have hired me to do that job. And, you know, only at Microsoft do you get a chance to do that. And it was the most fun and hardest thing I've ever done.
How come?
Well, first of all, going into consumer products is a very, and a hardware, you know, as well, is a very challenging business. And to be very, you know, it's absolutely date-driven. You know, you can't miss Christmas. Christmas happens no matter what. And certainly the 360 was on a very aggressive schedule, both on the hardware side and in the experience side. So it was just a very challenging, and boy, you learn very, very creative ways to ship. If you're looking for your nice, you know, gentle slope, that will be happening. So, and once we were done, when the software team was done, You know, we were still manufacturing in China, and a bunch of us all got on planes and went to China to the factories to help, you know, in running the line there in terms of, there's a lot of automation there. So, you know, at first everybody was saying, you know, so what are we going to do? We have no idea about hardware manufacturing, but there's a lot of software that's run there and a lot of just, you know, problem-solving skills that we got to apply there. But it was very fun. Mm. It was very fun.
Wow. And before that?
Before that, I did two incubations. I did an incubation called Halifax, which was a group of us who developed a solution for human-driven workflow. And a lot of what you see now in SharePoint and in the Windows Orchestration Engine actually was motivated out of some of the work that we did in Halifax. And then before that, I had an incubation that shipped as well that resulted in Great Plains, you know, in the acquisition of Great Plains. So we were building an online accounting. Actually, Musa and I worked on that one together as well. You know, we built an online accounting app, sort of a QuickBooks type of competitive application that we shipped in BCentral. And during that time was when we decided that maybe we should get into that business big time. So Great Plains came along and they actually took over the app, which is how I ended up doing Halifax. So and then before that, I was on the Microsoft Transaction Server team, or the Viper team, and that's actually when I joined Microsoft. And kind of came in from the outside with, you know, sort of the developer. I'd written a lot of, I had my own business for 12 years writing accounting apps or business applications for people. In a lot of very, you know, a lot of different verticals, concrete, oil trading, medical, it didn't really matter, but mostly just specialized businesses. And so that's sort of the perspective I brought in when I joined the team, was that sort of building real apps and us figuring out how do we take VB into the enterprise and building those kind of apps and what kind of plumbing. We were just contributing some of the plumbing.
Wow. So how did you land in high tech? What's your back? What'd you go to school for?
I went to Mills College in Oakland, so just across the bay. And I'm actually from Hawaii, a lot of my friends were actually going off to San Francisco. To be honest, I was actually supposed to be going to England to ride. I ride horses, and my goal had been to go back to England to ride and to get my instructor certification. That fell through at the last minute, so I ended up going to Mills with the rest of my friends and majored in math. And while I was there, I ended up going back to Hawaii on exchange to the University of Hawaii because I was supposed to figure out what I was going to do with my life. And while I was there, I had actually been cocktailing in the summers, because that's what people do in Hawaii, because sure. It's a big business and it's a tourism, and so hospitality is big. And I had worked my way up out of this sort of seedy part of Waikiki into the nice place in Waikiki. And I actually had a great job at the Hilton Hawaiian Village, cocktailing, where the girls were making a ton of money in tips at lunch. And my mom said to me, you know, that isn't exactly what we had in mind for you to do with your life. And at the time, my mom had gone back to school. Was getting her master's in urban planning, and there was some government funding for doing some computer tracking, or, you know, automation tracking of land permits in Hawaii. And she said, I think I have a job for you. And that's how I started coding.
Really?
So I got a job, you know, writing code in this government-funded project that she, you know, was part of the department she was in, and there was like three of us who wrote code for permit tracking in Hawaii.
Did it just come naturally to you, or?
It's sort of like, it's being creative. It's a, you know, it's a creative process. Figuring out puzzles and creating stuff and figuring out how things work. So.
And you learned on the job. You didn't go to school for that.
I didn't, yeah.
What was that like?
You know, I did take some computer classes. It's just that there was nothing, and I think it's still true now, that there is nothing like being, you know, on the job and having real-world problems to solve. I think, particularly in technology, has continued to move in a way, it's so quickly, and you know, it's still really in its infancy that it's hard for schools to keep up.
Yeah.
You know, I think you hear that from our interns too that come here and they learn. You know, they're when they're at school, they're participating in open source and they're participating in communities and that sort of thing, where they're learning a lot. But you know, the actual classes that you take, you know, are all important things to learn. But it's, you know, I think it's nothing like learning on the job and having real world problems to solve.
So, no regrets, no looking back. Do you wish you were still cocktailing?
It took a long time before I made more money.
Yeah,
it did. It was probably a good 5, 6, 7 years before I made more money than I would have done. So for a while there, I wasn't so sure, but no, it's worked out well for us.
And I'm guessing that back in the day that you were one of the few women.
Back in the day.
Yesterday.
Actually, no, there's more women in Xbox than there is even over in developer division.
Why is that? Because it's consumer focused?
I think, in games, in marketing and games, I mean, it's always true in marketing, too. I shouldn't say broadly in developer division, but, you know, still in the developer community, it's just still, you know, something that a lot of women haven't picked up on, you know, been drawn to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I think a lot of it is, I recently started paying more attention to why that is, and certainly there's a lot of women who are gravitating to biomed and that sort of thing, and I think, you know, in general the feeling is that it's a lot more towards social good, you know, and you know, a lot more of a contribution to society, which, you know, honestly, a lot of what we do can be as well, is that depends on what area you're focusing on. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the work, I feel great about a lot of work I've done that certainly either enables people to be able to solve problems or communicate, or, you know, in the case of Xbox, or people having fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's just fun to, you know, see your kids and, you know, see them having fun with their, you know, their friends and, you know, with something that you did. I mean, it's a little different than social contribution, you know, a little different social contribution, I was often the only woman, you know, who was in the room or at the table, but it's not that much better now.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. There are, surprisingly, a few, like a good percentage, relatively speaking, of women TAs at Microsoft.
Yeah, yes.
Why is that? Is that really a reason behind that, or?
I don't know. You know, I think that's a recent...
All supporting men.
Yeah, all supporting men.
Are there any female technical fellows?
No.
No.
No. No. And, yeah, but that is recent. I agree with you, and I did just think about that because I, of course, you know most of them. I think that certainly they're all very strong-minded women, too. Mm-hmm. You know, very... very creative, very insightful, and strong-minded women that have, you know, that are TAs right now. But I think that just may just be a coincidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the case.
We've had a few on the show, like Rebecca Norlander, yeah. Ray Christie Shaw.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely. So what's the hardest part about your job?
What's the hardest part? Oh, I don't know. I don't... Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of times, it depends on the area that we're focusing on. Sometimes rallying the troops, you know, getting a lot of very strong, you know, again, very strong-minded people, you know, pointed in one direction. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's not even necessary. A lot of times it's just, you know, getting the conversation going, you know,
Does being a TA for a technical fellow open doors?
To
getting that conversation going?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sure it does. You know, in terms of talking to people and getting people to have that conversation, it definitely helps. Mosin's a very much of a collaborator, you know, in terms of a person that is, you know, reaches out and talks to a lot of people. And one of the reasons that you know, I've I've worked for Mustin several times over the years, and he is one of these people that I always tell people that the reason he's so smart is because he talks to everybody and listens to everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a coincidence that he, is able to synthesize all that and make, and then turn it into something that's even better usually than the parts. So, mm-hmm. That's the fun part actually is kind of reconnecting after spending 3 years in Xbox, is sort of reconnecting in the developer community again, because it's a very different communities, the mm-hmm. game development community and the the developer community for enterprise applications and that sort of thing. It's just a different different group of people.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, for one thing, the game developers aren't really writing managed code.
In general, they're not. However, XNA has gotten, has gotten a lot of momentum. Mm. And there's a lot more, so that people, and technology has gotten to the point where we can actually, abstract and not have to be writing right next to the metal, because that's generally been the reason, right, is that they always want to be right next to the metal so that they can take full advantage of all the horsepower they have on a machine, whether it's a console or a PC. Mm-hmm. Now we are getting to the point where they can do that. They can build reusable game engines and that sort of thing. That part has gotten a little bit better, a little bit more attractive. There's some pretty good XNA games like that are running in 1080p mm-hmm. that are pretty amazing that's even possible. So if you haven't seen them, you should go see them.
Absolutely. So you said you studied, one of the things over our 3 years, I'll point this at Ritzy now, over our 3 years, one of the things that we have found is that many of the technical women that we've interviewed have all majored in math. Some of them computer science.
Yeah.
But most across the board, it's math. So the question that we'll ask you that we've asked them is, why math? Why did you decide to major in math?
Why math?
Were you always good at math?
Yeah. I was always good at math. Mm-hmm. And then I started, we had a program at Mills called the 3+2, which was an engineering program, and I started in that, actually. I was going to be a mechanical engineer, and mm-hmm. I got partway through that, and I thought, that's a long time in school. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't as much fun as I'd wanted it to be. And so I basically said, well, what else could I major in that's hard? That could be more fun. Yeah. And math was something that, like you asked, is something I was always good at. So I basically decided that I was going to do that. However, there was a point in my junior year when I took a final. I was like, oh, I better find another major. It was one of those open book tests that everybody thinks, oh, it's got to be easier. And it was one of those ones that it was so hard. We all walked out going, gosh, we're going to have to find something else to do now. But it turned out that I passed the final, so I was doing okay.
So when you were a kid in school, like elementary, junior high, high school, I mean, were there computer science classes for you to take?
Yeah. No. We didn't have computers in school.
And this wasn't just because you were in Hawaii?
No, it wasn't. It's because I'm just a little bit older than that.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Back in the day.
No. I used to live in Hawaii.
Actually, Hawaii is pretty, to be honest, there's actually a lot of R&D that's going on. And at the time, because I started out, I graduated from college during the first technology, or entered the business in the first technology boom. And there were quite a few Hawaiian companies. Actually, ASP, ASP was a Hawaiian acquisition. As well. Mm-hmm. Actually, turned out that we all knew some of the same people. But yes, there's a lot of work. And there's a lot of funding, actually, still, that's going on in Hawaii around research and development work.
Interesting.
It's a good place to create. Mm-hmm. Generally what happens, and this is what we had to do, is once we were ready to go to market, the company had to move. And that time, the first technology boom was centered in Southern California, so the company was moved to Southern California.
So. Interesting. So what you're saying is I could move to Maui, which I want to do, and I could still work there. Computers.
Maui, I don't know how much is going on in Maui, but in Honolulu there's a lot going on there.
Excellent. Well, Motion's, one of the reasons he's a genius, I mean, he lives in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And he works for Microsoft.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, he does. He actually retired from Microsoft for a little bit, and and then came back, and he was already in Honolulu, and so he stayed in Honolulu. So we have a Honolulu office.
His home?
No, we actually have an office actually down in downtown Honolulu.
Wow.
Yeah, right in the middle of the business district.
Huh. How often does he come back here?
He's here almost every month, but at least every 6 to 8 weeks.
Hmm.
There's a lot going on. He when he's here, he's working. He's in nonstop. 12 to 14 hour days.
Mm.
Meeting back to back with a lot of people that he talks to when he's in Honolulu, but he doesn't see face to face. So, so he still has a lot of contact.
Interesting.
And live meeting and. Yeah, a lot of the tools, actually, it's quite interesting because we have part of the development team for stuff, the other part of my job, they're half of them are in Honolulu, so we have daily stand-up meetings and use live meeting. I mean, we're definitely consumers of all of those type of technologies that keep people really connected, and IM, we use IM all the time. I have been going like every 8 weeks. I missed one month, but that helps too, because you get to see everybody and spend time with them, and so then you're able to come back and you still have that connection.
Cool. I mean, it's a great thing in the sense that actually having to be inside the Death Star all the time is unnecessary. You should be able to be around any number of places, because the internet is everywhere. It's not that hard to do this job, especially if you're a developer. Write code, check it in. I mean, I don't see why there aren't more developers living off campus.
It's the collaboration part. Steve actually brought this up at a meeting, a meeting that he had. He goes around the company and meets with a lot of the senior people. And he was, there was a discussion about that, about having remote development sites versus having nomad, development, which is basically what you're referring to, is people can be anywhere and they're all just contributing. The one thing I do think that makes it challenging is the collaboration, and you have to work at it. You have to work at how do you more effectively collaborate, with the people you're working with.
Certainly,
open source, as he pointed out, open source has been pretty successful without that kind of collaboration. Mm-hmm. They certainly collaborate, but not on that very high touch.
Sure.
Collaboration.
Well, you could virtualize the collaboration experience inside of the IDE.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So we could pair program without being anywhere near each other.
Right.
Literally.
And so... Because
if you had like the, the multi-point,
mm-hmm.
you could have multiple inputs in one. I mean, it could be kind of a pain in the ass if, people are writing code at the same time, hard to follow. But you could actually be writing like each, pick a class, people writing different classes. You can
Absolutely.
See what the other person's doing. Go, dude. What are you doing, man? Whatever. Or like, wow, that's cool. I'm going to cut that code and stick it into my thing over here real quick.
Right.
Whatever.
Those are definitely ideas that we're exploring, as we look forward, because it is the world we live in. Even with remote development sites, it's actually important. We have a great site in China that, group of people that contributed into TMARC, and it's just learning how to collaborate better. In spite of time differences, our Hawaii time differences are okay.
Yeah,
3 hours.
Not
hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the surfing that what do you mean he's sick again, man?
Yeah.
So I want to touch on a couple of things that you mentioned. One is that you said that you wanted to major in math because it was hard.
So it was the hardest thing.
Do you seek out? Is that a characteristic that describes you? Do you seek out hard challenges like that?
I like challenges. Recently, I've decided that perhaps I need to not be drawn to adrenaline.
That's addictive, huh?
that fear is not necessarily a criteria for choosing what I do next. So I'm in recovery on that one.
Is this because you have a family and they want you to?
I do have a family, and that I have two teenage boys and my husband also, who is a horse trainer, and there's just a lot of stuff that we like to do, and when I do find myself like I did in Xbox, it becomes pretty all consuming. So I had decided that I was going to try and wean myself from that type of being attracted to those type of situations. But yeah, it's always fun to do hard stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of definitions of hard. You know, there can be technically hard problems to solve. A piece of technology is hard. It can be hard to figure out how to marry technology together to solve a problem. Or business, challenges can be hard, too. So there's a lot of different ways to satisfy that need.
You can relate, right, Carmine?
Oh, absolutely.
And then horses. So you ride?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah? Do you like, what do you call that? Participate in shows or whatever?
I do. I haven't in the last few years just because I haven't had a horse to go, and we actually have a new young horse that my husband's getting started so that I can ride. Mm-hmm. Actually the other reason, as I mentioned, I was on my way to go and to England to ride so I could be an instructor, and then I started coding and I said, well, gee, maybe this is a better way to make a living so I can afford the horses. And so that's one of the reasons that I keep doing it is that I love to do what I do, but it also allows us to do, to have the horses, and my older son rides now and competes. And so it's a little all consuming once your child decides that they're also going to compete.
Wow. You're an interesting person.
Oh, absolutely.
You've got a lot going on.
For sure. So listen.
Now she gets quiet.
But I mean, going back to the theme of the 3-year thing.
Yeah.
We always end, but we don't really end when we say we're going to end. But the point is, why? What do you recommend for women in the industry? Like, why should they come work at Microsoft? Why should they? So if you have another, there's plenty of women that are going to be out there that are kind of teetering on what to do with their careers. Why should they choose a career in technology?
Well, I think that one is that as I mentioned before is that just as they're being drawn to biomed and some of these others is that there is so much left to do in technology. I mean, we're just beginning, and as we look at spaces like entertainment, consumer type devices, and mobile. It's not just about being able to talk on the cell phone or to play games. It is a lot about, enabling and connecting people in remote areas and that sort of thing. And I think that's where I'd love to see women. And I think women approach those problems in slightly different ways. And I think that's where you'd love to see more women get involved. And, if it's really trying to figure out how it actually contributes to society, I think there's a lot of ways that technology, contributes. So to that extent, I think that Microsoft is just a great place to work in terms of opportunities. It's a big enough place and it's diverse enough in what we work on. Like I said, I would have never had the chance to go and, ship a game console working anywhere else. So, and having that consumer, experience actually has definitely influenced how I see things now and the types of things that I think about now than I did before. So, getting that experience and it's a great place to live. I mean, I came from Hawaii and yeah, it's a little colder, but, it's a beautiful place to live. So in case there's anybody out there who's looking at coming to Seattle.
So, but you've never had a problem in 13 years in terms of feeling like you've, earned your seat at the table and being respected, and have you had to try harder because you're an attractive female? Being taken seriously?
It's not something I think about much. I have had some experiences, and, the thing is, because it had not really ever happened for me before in my career, period. It had happened, but, one of those things that you just sort of laugh about and say, fine. For all the times that it's a problem, sometimes it works in your favor. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get people to listen to you because of it that they might not have listened to a guy. I don't know. I mean, I think that I've always found that it balanced. But I have had a couple of incidences where that made me realize that sometimes you don't get to go to the table. So, for instance, and it's not actually the table, it's like the locker room, it's the restroom. Mm-hmm. And, it's sort of funny because I've talked to a few people that you don't generally talk about these types of things. And there's some women, some of which you mentioned, that I've actually talked to about this before. And, once you say it, you're like, that's right. Mm-hmm. you know? And I have found, in general, that when I've mentioned that to the guys that I work with, they're very sensitive to it. They really, you know, they don't think about it. And that is, you know, it's not that anybody's doing anything malicious. It's mm-hmm. just that they're, you know, it's where they're hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not hanging out in the men's locker room at the pro club.
Right.
On the other hand, you know, to be honest, Christy Rayshaw and I had a discussion in the women's locker room not too long ago, and I said, you see, nobody else got to have that conversation in here either.
Yeah.
So that's actually, it was funny because when that happened, it reminded me that, you know, of that. So to that extent, it's mostly that, and I don't think it's done maliciously. I just think that sometimes people, you know, don't think about it. And then as you go into the higher, you know, more senior ranks, a lot of it becomes, you know, personal relationships and, you know, when promotions and you know, people are looking at, you know, giving somebody an opportunity, it can be that personal relationship or that sort of thing that causes them to give you, you know, take a risk, right? Mm-hmm. It's because actually generally when they are in more senior positions, nobody's got the experience. They haven't done it before. And that is where I do think it's occasionally harder for women because they don't have that connection. A lot of times they don't have that personal, you know, or a deeper connection with their peers or you know, their senior management. So, and again, I think that once, you know, this is something that's talked about more. I think that I find in general, most of the people, once it's pointed out to them, they become a lot more sensitive to it and, you know, try not to just use that criteria for deciding, you know, who's going to get the promotion or the opportunity, you know, for the next job.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just awareness. A lot of it's awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think it can be done in a very respectful way.
And Microsoft is really trying hard to, I mean, I've been here 11 years, so I feel like the company is really making an effort towards really taking diversity very seriously
yeah.
and making sure that everyone has an opportunity. It's not just about women, it's, you know, all types.
Yeah, it is. And I think, so I think awareness has definitely been heightened. The other thing I also tell women is it's true actually for everybody, is sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
You need to really find the person who's going to shepherd your career
mm-hmm.
And help you. And it's not your manager or your mentor. It's, you know, somebody who's really in a position to actually help influence
mm-hmm.
And be your sponsor. And every, you know, when I finally figured this out, you know, I actually asked one of our VPs. I said, you name me one VP who didn't have, like, where you can't
mm-hmm.
identify the sponsor.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think everybody has them. So nobody needs to be ashamed that they've got
advocate.
Them. You have to have your advocate
yes.
and your sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have to be a participant. You know, you have to be active about it. You need to kind of go and identify who that is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, sometimes you're going to make career decisions because it actually puts you in a better position or closer to that person where they can help influence, you know, where you want to go with your career.
Without revealing who your sponsor is it a man or a woman?
It's a man.
So that's okay, right? I mean,
yeah.
you have to go and seek out somebody just like you.
Yeah, and I think that has, you know, that certainly has been a discussion over the years is, you know, looking for a mentor for me, you know, it's just like, well, okay, so what woman are we going to pick? And needless to say, as we started out discussing, you can get through that list pretty quickly. And I don't think it has to be. You know, what I look for is people that I respect, that I think represent the values that I respect, and you know that in general, I think the person has to that you choose as a mentor needs to have a style that you feel like you can get close to. There's a lot of people I really respect that have styles that I just, you know, would not work for me, and I can learn from them, but I'm not going to necessarily adopt those styles because they just aren't ones that I can, you know, that I would be able to effectively pull off. But, you know, so I look in general for people that I think have styles that are slightly, you know, closer to mine that I can then learn from.
Good alignment.
Yeah. And there's a lot. There are a lot of really, you know, amazing people that we have in senior management here and at the VP level. And every time one of those people gets promoted to VP, I always send a mail saying it makes my heart feel good to see somebody who's just a good person, you know, a decent person who cares about people and has, you know, strong values, you know, that gets into those positions because it just makes us a better company.
Interesting. Yeah. So you're going to be at PDC, right?
Yep.
And you're going to be hanging out at the Women in Technology area, and...
Are there any women coming attendees? I mean,
there are a few.
Okay.
You know,
just kidding.
Probably me, most of them.
I have enough fingers and toes. But yeah, there's a few.
And we'll be hanging out in the bathroom.
Yeah.
There you go. Bathroom. The women's locker room. No lines.
That's right.
That's one advantage. But yeah, but you'll be available on the show floor, so you should hook up with Tracy while
Absolutely.
You're there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Or somewhere in Visual Studio Team System. I'm not quite sure how we're... set up there, but
well, you guys got a booth, you got a track lounge, you'll be all over.
Yeah.
Big room. All right.
So Women in Technology is big at PDC?
Well, we're doing two things. We're doing a free workshop on the first day mm-hmm. with Lego, in partnership with Lego, so it's kind of like a building interactive thing. And then on Wednesday, just before Ask the Experts, we're having a Women in Technology reception.
Outstanding.
And men and women both are invited to both of those activities. It's not just females only.
Cool.
It's diversity with the capital D.
Nice. Great.
So we'll see you there.
Absolutely.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.